At that moment the cow, as I had expected, rose to her feet, and the farmer gesticulated at the little man.
"Well, go on, dang you, get some straw and rubber legs. They'll be numb."
Meekly, Ned twisted some straw into a wisp and began to do a bit of massage. Mr. Daggett got up stiffly, felt gingerly along his back, then walked up beside the cow to make sure the chain hadn't tightened around her neck. He was on his way back when the big animal swung round suddenly and brought her cloven hoof down solidly on the farmer's toe. If he had been wearing heavy boots, it wouldn't have been so bad. But his feet were encased in ancient cracked Wellingtons which offered no protection.
"Ow! Ow! Ow!"
yelled Mr. Daggett, beating on the hairy back with his fists.
"Get off, you old bitch!"
He heaved, pushed and writhed, but the 10 hundredweight of beef ground down inexorably. The farmer was only released when the cow slid off his foot, and I know from experience that that sliding is the worst part. Mr. Daggett hopped round on one leg, nursing the bruised extremity in his hands.
"Bloody hell!" he moaned. "Oh, bloody hell!"
Just then I happened to glance towards Ned, and was amazed to see the apathetic little face crinkle suddenly into a wide grin of unholy glee. I couldn't recall him even smiling before, and my astonishment must have shown in my face because his boss whipped round suddenly and stared at him. As if by magic, the sad mask slipped back into place, and he went on with his rubbing. Mr. Daggett hobbled over to the car with me, and as I was about to leave, he nudged me. "Look at him," he whispered. Ned, milk pail in hand, was bustling along the byre with unwonted energy. His employer gave a bitter smile. "It's the only time he ever hurries. Can't wait to get out to pub." "Oh, well, you say he doesn't get drunk. There can't be any harm in it." The deep, sunk eyes held me. "Don't you believe it. He'll come to a bad end gadding about the way he does. But surely the odd glass of beer, but there's more than that to it." He glanced around him. "There's women." I laughed incredulously.
"Oh, come on now, Mr. Daggett. What women?"
"Over at pub," he muttered. "Them Bradley lassies." "The landlord's daughters?"
"Oh, really? I can't believe it."
"All right, you can say what you like. He's got his eye on them." "I know. I've only been in that pub once, but I've seen for myself." I didn't know what to say. But in any case, I had no opportunity because he turned and strode into the house. Alone in the cold darkness, I looked at the gaunt silhouette of the old farmhouse above me. In the dying light of the November day, the rain streamed down the rough stones, and the wind caught at the thin tendril of smoke from the chimney, hurling it in ragged streamers across the slate-blue pallor of the western sky. The fell hung over everything, a black, featureless bulk, oppressive and menacing. Through the kitchen window I could see the oil lamp casting its dim light over the bare table, the cheerless hearth with its tiny flicker of fire. In the shadows at the far end the steps rose into Ned's loft, and I could imagine the little figure clambering up to get changed and escape to Briston. Across the valley the single street of the village was a broken grey thread in the gloom, but in the cottage windows the lamps winked faintly. These were Ned Finch's bright lights, and I could understand how he felt. After Scar Farm, Briston would be like Monte Carlo. The image stayed in my mind so vividly that after two more calls that evening I decided to go a few miles out of my way as I returned homeward. I cut across the dale, and it was about 8:30 when I drove into Briston. It was difficult to find the Halton Arms, because there was no lighted entrance, no attempt to advertise its presence, but I persevered, because I had to find out what was behind Mr. Daggett's tale of debauchery. I located it at last, just like the door of an ordinary house with a faded wooden sign hanging above it. Inside, the usual domino game was in progress. A few farmers sat chatting quietly. The Mrs. Bradley, plain but pleasant-faced women in their 40s, sat on either side of the fire, and sure enough, there was Ned with a half-pint glass in front of him. I sat down by his side. "Hello, Ned."
"Now then, Mr. Harriet,"
he murmured absently, glancing at me with his strange, expectant eyes. One of the Bradley ladies put down her knitting and came over. pint of bitter, please, I said. What will you have, Ned? Nay, thank you, Mr. Elliot. This'll do for me. It's me second, and I'm not a big drinker, I knows. Miss Bradley laughed. Yes. He nobbut has his two glasses a night. But he enjoys them, don't you, Ned? That's right, I do. He looked up at her, and she smiled kindly down at him before going for my beer. He took a sip at his glass. I really come for the company, Mr. Elliot. Yes, of course, I said. I knew what he meant. He probably sat on his own most of the time, but around him was warmth and comfort and friendliness. A great log sent flames crackling up to the wide chimney. There was electric light and shining mirrors with whiskey slogans painted on their surface. It wasn't anything like Scar Farm. The little man said very little. He spun out his drink for another hour, looking around him as the dominoes clicked, and I lowered another contemplative pint. The Mrs. Bradley knitted and brewed tea in a big black kettle over the fire, and when they had to get up to serve their customers, they occasionally patted Ned playfully on the cheek as they passed. By the time he tipped down the last drop and rose to go, it was 9:45, and he still had to cycle across to the other side of the dale. Another late night for Ned.